Welcome to the Legendary Frogcast. I'm your host, Joseph Blanchette, and with me is Dustin Watts.
Greetings, true believers.
And Randy Keepers.
I was expecting an ahoy hoy out of you, but all right.
I know.
We've gone several MCU movies and shows now without a Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like something's missing, you know?
There's a hole in our hearts. It's never going to be filled, friends.
And that must mean we're here today to talk about the thing that's on everyone's minds.
Jackass.
Dr. Michael Morbius. Finally released to theaters. Record-breaking box office. Like, sequel already announced, spin-offs already announced.
Mm-hmm. One of the greatest films of our time. Like, it's insane how much acclaim that movie has.
I mean, like above, it's like 120% like audience rating. Like, it's just crazy how much people love this film. And after there's a Dr. Michael Morbius's surprise cameo in Moon Knight and Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, people are just morbid out. You know?
Yeah. Everybody's Morbius.
Jared Leto is now so popular, you would almost forget he's a cult leader. Allegedly.
Well, I know I'm a member of the cult of Dr. Michael Morbius.
Yeah, I know. Like, if it's honest to God, if Jared Leto runs for president, I'm voting for him, no questions asked.
Mm-hmm. As long as he dresses like the old Morbster. No, I'm there.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah, we're lying. We're lying through our teeth. Yeah. We're lying. We lied. We bamboozled you. You fool. You bought
it. Well, I was the only one telling the truth. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Speaking of Dr. Michael Morbius, we are here to talk about Moon Knight and Dr. Strange in the multiverse. In the Morbin-verse of madness.
Morbius.
I mean, verse of madness. Y'all can talk about Morbius. I'm staying away, far away from that garbage fire.
Wait, hold on. That was a very dismissive grunt, Joey. What was that? What do you mean? What does that mean?
It's like, I was just thinking that it was very good. So I've heard.
Yeah, I don't need to see.
Like, you know how Venom was kind of bad, but it was fun.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's not Morbius.
Yeah. The other thing I heard, and this is just some hot tea that I managed to dig up because that's what I do as a person. So previously in the original run of the film, at the post credits scene. Because, you know, I'll spoil it. Because, you know, why? Why not? No one gives a shit. Anyway. So it used to be Vulture would show up and he'd be like, thanks for meeting me here, but we've got to talk about Spider-Man. Well, apparently, in the runs, like, if you go today, waste your money, and go see Morbius. The post-credits scene removed the reference to Spider-Man in it.
Yeah, I started that tweet too. I don't know if it's just that theater or what, but...
Well, I hope that's what that is. I hope it's Sony going, abort!
I mean, they had tombs and stuff in the trailers and stuff. Apparently, he doesn't show up in the actual movie. Like, it's just during that post-credits scene where he's under a mask the entire time, so they can put whatever they want. Well,
anyway, let's talk about something good.
So Morbius talk will have to wait. Yeah, Morbius talk will have to wait.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about, you know, one of those Marvel properties that I knew absolutely nothing about, mm-hmm. which is Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I will confess, I know very little about Moon Knight. We're starting to hit the point in the MCU, where we're starting to hit, we're starting to get into the obscure stuff.
Yep. Well, not just super obscure, because like Moon Knight has had a cult following, like for a while. He has for quite some time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, to me, is that one big thing that's been consistent about Moon Knight is that he is inconsistent. Almost every single time a writer has picked him up, they've done something completely different with him every time. And I love it. I that's one of the reasons why I like Moon Knight. I think he's cool. That's one of the things that makes him cool to me. I won't speak to everybody else. You know, everyone can have their own opinion. But I went into the show not knowing a ton about Moon Knight myself, and just being ready for whatever comes. You know,
I mean, I know a bit about Egyptian mythology, so I mean, but then again, this is Marvel. When have they ever stuck to mythology?
Well, they don't. They don't.
So imagine my surprise when this show is probably just right behind WandaVision.
In terms of how good it is?
Yeah, in terms of like how much like the MCU Disney Plus stuff. And like I just think WandaVision is just a tiny bit better because like I just love the sitcom-y stuff. Like I kind of think this is a better show maybe overall.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's
slightly really, slightly better.
It's in its own ways. It does everything right to me, at least as far as building mystique, building character, building situations for you to care about, and then not paying them off in a very stupid way, you know?
Tell me, who is Moon Knight?
Depends on who Moon Knight is.
Depends on the time of day.
Depends on who's writing.
Yep. Well, not just depends on who's writing. Depends on what's going on. Because our boy, Mark Spector, Stephen Grant, Jake Lockley, they are multiple people living in a single body. Now, at the time that Moon Knight was written, DID wasn't really a very well-known thing. And it was just a thing to kind of add to the character, make him interesting. You could almost call him a riff on Batman, honestly. But the thing is that one of the consistent things about Moon Knight is that he is a mentally neurodivergent person. Is the best way to describe it without being insensitive. Or calling it out, because it is a neurodivergency, and that he is not wired like a neurotypical person. And this can range from the fact that like there's different explanations for it all the time, from straight up actual diagnosable mental illness to the fact that Khonshu lives in his head, and that the extreme amount of trauma and harm that can do to a human being causing it. But I appreciate that, especially nowadays, he's not treated like just a crazy person. You know, they don't just say he's granularly crazy and that's where his superpowers come from.
Yeah.
And as the
mental sciences advance as they do,
mm-hmm.
what exactly is his deal changes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, they decided in the show, like, it's not because of Khonshu
yep.
fracturing his mind. Like, he had this condition
when he was
since he was a little kid.
And the circumstances of him getting there, it is believed that systems, which is a common nomenclature for persons who have DID, systems are developed under extreme trauma, and goodness gracious, survivor's guilt coupled upon abusive parents is one hell of a way to get there.
And let's not be and in the context of the show, being the host of Conchu probably didn't help things.
No, it didn't.
In fact, it probably made it. In fact, it probably made it worse.
I think so too. Because he seemed to have a lid on it up until later, like Layla, or Layla, yeah, Layla didn't have Layla. Is it Layla?
I don't know.
Layla. I think it's Layla. But like she was married to the guy, you know, and she didn't ever meet Steven, you know. So like he must have had a pretty good cap on things. Yeah. Until things got out of hand.
Ooh, that's so good.
But we'll come back. We're going to come back. Put a pin in that phrase. We'll come back to it.
I know I was going to say it's a call forward, but yeah.
It's I don't think they were like together very long, and Steven seemed to be someone who hasn't emerged from his personality for like in perhaps like a really long time. Mm-hmm. And it seems like what happened to deal with the death, this is spoilers, by the way, we're not going to hold back. Him having to deal with his mother dying was really when Steven like really got to become his own person at that point. That's when he started his life in England and all that. And like got a job and an apartment and all that stuff. And Mark only showed up like intermittently during that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake, probably the other guy.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I think Jake probably showed up after Conchu did. Jake seems like a direct response.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see Mark. Obviously, he's the original identity. Steven was there to deal with the pain, but Jake was probably there to deal with like the stuff that Mark couldn't do.
Yeah.
Like when he had to like, you know, really get violent and do immoral things. Like I think that's when Jake, they probably go into a lot more detail in the comics about this, but in the show, it seems like Mark
it's different.
Blacks out.
It is. Don't. And Jake, you can't use the comics for any basis hardly.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, but I'm just saying they probably mentioned it at some point. But like, it seems like Jake will come out like Mark's in control, and when he comes back, he's like, "Holy crap, what did I just do?" I mean, like that was Jake like getting the job done.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like a Conchu like saying, "I think I use Jake for this moment."
Yeah, exactly. And so, but yeah, that's
in Conchu, of course, being an Egyptian god, obviously.
Yeah, Egyptian vengeance god, no less. Who, you know, what's funny is that he does seem to have, like, he does care, you know, like he isn't, you know, he isn't a total monster. He's just, he's got things he needs to deal with, you know, and he doesn't agree with Amit's plan to purge everyone for what they, you know, what they may do, you know. Mm-hmm. And like and I see where he's coming from, cuz he's right. It's not right to do that. You know, and but the, you know, he's like, I'm going to judge when they do it. You know, mortals will do what mortals do. And that's what I do, you know.
Ikanchi's like, let them do it first before I judge them. Let's not put the cart before the horse, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it is Layla, by the way.
Layla? I was right? Yep. Okay.
Cool. And also, I think one of the best villains in these Disney Plus shows, and even in the MCU, Arthur Harrow is a really fascinating villain.
Yeah, yeah.
He is almost on the edge of not being a villain.
Well, almost, but you know, but he is the extreme ideal of like, or like he has the ideals that are very extreme, and that he is very much like there are he's people an who...
He's an absolutist. Mm-hmm. Absolute.
Yeah.
Everything is black and white, no gray.
Yep.
He even accepts, like, whenever he does succeed in his plan to resurrect
Ahmet. Yeah.
Ahmet. It's like he said, like, it's like, I know my scales are unbalanced. Like, I'm willing to accept whatever fate you have for me. And she's like, it's like, yeah, but you're useful.
Like, she even said himself, she needed somebody who was unbalanced because they would be more willing to
help.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I noticed was really interesting about his character was that he was perfectly willing to die out there on the spot when he met Ahmet about that whole situation. Like, he was willing to die, face death with dignity. But then later, when Jake shows up and points a gun at him, and Khonshu's like, "Hey, what up, buddy?" And how actually scared he was. It's like, oh, okay, so that was all bravado, wasn't it?
Oh, innocent. Well, he also knew that if he died, Ahmet died as well.
That's also true. You're right.
Oh, yeah, because at that point, they had to combine their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, I just love this show. And, like, well, part of me wished, like, had a little bit more Moon Knight in it. You know, kicking butt. Mm-hmm. The fact that they had two episodes where he didn't even appear and just focused on Mark and Steven. And it was, like, kind of the best parts of the show. Just proves of how good it was, in my opinion.
We also had Tolerant. We also got to meet Tolerant, who is an absolute sweetheart.
Tolerant, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a peach.
And even if the last episode's kind of quote-unquote devolved into, like, giant monsters fighting and big fight scene, like, it kind of wrapped everything up at that point. It, like, it was just kind of like a cherry on top. You know, people Mark and Steven at that point, like, were in agreement. They were they were in balance at that point. They were out of balance before. Mm-hmm. And it was just really satisfying.
Yeah.
So it was a giant bird fighting a giant alligator.
Kaiju fight, yes.
It was a kaiju fight. I'm always there for the kaiju fight.
Yeah, me too.
But no, that if y'all complaining about a kaiju fight, I'm gonna have to strenuously disagree with your opinion. Kaiju fights are always welcome.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
A couple little tidbits I've learned about the show. Dane Whitman from the Eternals, they were thinking about having him cameo. I don't know why. Maybe he would be someone at the museum. And also with the Eternals, they were going to have a flashback where an ancient avatar of a Khonshu was going to fight the Eternals at some point. I think the only reason that they didn't do that is because it would have been super expensive.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And there's going to be a reference to Gore at some point. Gore the God Killer.
Well, I'm kind of glad that they didn't do that. Like, I'm glad that they, but they didn't do that. You know, I am pretty happy about Moon Knight being being its own thing. You know.
Yeah, there are really no MCU, like, greater MCU stuff, except for, like, they reference the ancestral plane for Black Panther.
Yep, that's it. That's, like, all of it.
Yeah, and that's just basically saying, it's like, yeah, there's this place where souls go, and just depending on your beliefs, like, it can be whatever you want.
Yeah.
So, like, that's their way of saying all religions are true.
Every one of them. Yep. Nobody's wrong today.
And oddly, here's the odd thing.
Everyone gets a medal.
As far as I can tell, as far as I can figure out, this is the latest point. The Moon Knight takes is at the latest point in the MCU timeline. Mm-hmm. Like, well, outside of, you know, weird timeline shenanigans. This takes place after Hawkeye, after No Way Home.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is like,
even though there's nothing in it to really like make that super important. They don't even reference, like, it seems like everything references the blip and stuff, but there was nothing about that in there.
They didn't need to, you know, it wasn't necessarily the story.
For all we know, this took place like before it. I mean, this is really, I mean, I think officially it takes place like Dustin said, but
2025. I'm reading this story.
Yeah. But yeah, like, this show was just cool, especially like in the first couple episodes when like Steven would black out and then find himself like driving a car backwards, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like part of me was like, oh man, we missed a cool action scene, but like just the way they handled it made it it kind of added to the mystery and the how disorienting it all is from like Steven's perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it does a good job at making you uncomfortable, you know.
So where do you guys place Moon Knight personally in like the MCU, in the Disney Plus MCU?
To me, it's on par with Loki and WandaVision.
I
love Loki and WandaVision. They're fantastic films. They're fantastic shows.
Yeah, I would say as far as knocking it out of the park, we're 3 for 4, 3 for 5. Yeah, 3 for 5. Knocking it out of the park, we're 3 for 5.
Are you saying that Hawkeye was not fun for you?
Okay, 6.
Oh, it's good. It's good.
Okay, no, the like, okay, like 3 for 6.
No.
Okay, 4 for 6.
I mean, I kind of forget how many there were. I don't know if you're counting.
Okay, there's WandaVision.
Yay.
There's Loki.
Yay.
There's Hawkeye. There's Winter Soldier.
Halfway yay.
Yeah, halfway yay.
Yeah, 3. There's What If.
Halfway yay.
Yeah, halfway yay.
And then there's Hawkeye.
It was just too fun. It has to be yay.
Yeah. And Hawkeye was really good. Like, I really, there's a lot of stuff in Hawkeye that happens that just makes me really happy.
Yeah.
And like, and it's
like really, every second Yelena was on screen was a yay moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's because the whole thing is fun. I liked it.
Yeah. So
thoroughly, I enjoyed it.
Oh, that's another thing I heard. They were considering making I forget her real name in the show, but Echo was going to be like Mark's girlfriend or something, but they decided to go with the Egyptian actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a cool moment when like she became the avatar of the one goddess.
The Scarlet Spirit.
Yeah. Is that based off like an actual hero, or did they make that up for the show?
I don't even know. I don't even know. Because that's how little I know about
it. I don't know.
Movie, that's how
I've definitely never heard of it.
I think so, but at this point, I think they're just doing what happens every time with Moon Knight. The writers just do whatever they want. So.
Mm-hmm.
Just
throw up your hands. I looked up Scarlet Scarab, and it's mostly showing me pictures from Moon Knight, but also of this completely different looking man superhero.
Well, that is kind of that character's father. maybe okay. sort of. I don't know.
Nothing modern. All this looks like from like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Yep, doesn't surprise me.
I just don't. At this point, just throw up your hands and don't worry about it. Because
her outfit is a big upgrade from what this old school Skrull Scarab is.
Yeah. The MCU's been pretty good with designs, with costume design, so far.
Mm-hmm. Moon Knight. Way thumbs up.
Yeah. Go watch it. Go have some fun.
Okay, it's time to give in to a madness, a multiverse of madness.
You know it's great. You know it's great to me. You know it's fantastic for me. It makes me happy. It makes me so happy. Is all this Sam Raimi love I've been getting recently? Because I got Multiverse of Madness that makes me happy. And I got the Evil Dead game that also makes me happy. And I love it. I love it.
I will say this, but before we get into the whole film, holy crap, if I hadn't known that Sam Raimi had directed this film, I would have figured it out by watching the movie.
Yep.
This is the most Sam Raimi film I have seen him do in decades. And I love it.
Yeah, it makes me very happy.
Like, this is what I imagined Sam Raimi doing a superhero film looked like.
Well, I mean, he did Spider-Man.
Before Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
Don't get me wrong. I love most of the Spider-Man Sam Raimi trilogy. Mm-hmm. Most. But this... Yeah.
When he's allowed to be Sam Raimi, yeah, it's good.
Oh, my God. This spoke to both of Sam Raimi's strengths. You realize that?
Yeah.
This was a superhero horror film.
Yeah. This kind of.
Kind of.
I don't know, man. There are some pretty freaked out parts of this film, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, parts of it, but you know, parts of it.
Some of the imagery is really good. Like a lot of the visual effects are amazing. A lot of the what we get shown as far as powers. I heard somebody have this opinion. They're like, when they're casting spells, they don't do enough spell variety. I watched it again, by the way. I've seen it twice now, right? And yeah. I like watching what Doctor Strange does and everyone else does. Like, the only person who doesn't seem to have a lot of spell variety is Wanda, but yeah. It's because she uses the one that works. And even still, like, watching her, she does go over a bunch of abilities, like using mirrors to get out of the mirror universe and all that stuff, and then using it like a weapon and getting around it, and then crawling out of it like a skeleton, mm-hmm. You know,
like she was auditioning for the freaking Grudge, or
yeah. Yeah, and she's cracking and popping, and she's like, hello, would you like to have a normal conversation as her jaw's slipping back into place, you know?
Yeah, and like, I just watched the Evil Dead trilogy, you know, just in the past couple weeks, and like, even though that some is kind of his older stuff, it's like, the man is all about camera work.
Oh, yeah.
And,
there's
a lot of camera work that like really sets it apart from a lot of other MCU stuff. And you're right, that scene where Wanda touches the mirror and turns the water, the guy immediately realized, oh, that is obviously like an Evil Dead reference.
Mm-hmm. Or like when other Wanda is about to be possessed and she's starting to hallucinate, and like, and that bit where she looks out the window and there's the other Wanda in the reflection, and it has a little yeah. scare cord, and I'm like, ooh. And then when she gets possessed, she looks directly at the camera, like, I know what I did, and then
yeah.
it moves on. It's so good.
Also, when she was coming in to possess it, it became a Raimi cam.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I mean, we're just hitting all, he's hitting all the points in the Sam Raimi visual language book in this movie. And I'm all here for it.
Also considering, like, he was brought in, like, late, kind of late into the production. He was replacement for the original director.
Yeah, Scott Derrickson. Yeah, because
by all accounts, they were flying by the seat of their pants the entire production.
Like, you know what's crazy to me is like,
okay, oh yeah, because this also was like one of the early COVID shoots, like when the studios were just figuring out COVID.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of tell that in a couple, especially in the, this is spoilers, you can kind of tell in the Illuminati scenes that, like, none of the actors were probably on set together.
Yeah.
They aren't. But holy crap, just the little callbacks that he put it, that, oh, Danny Elfman working with Sam Raimi again. Yes. The yes.
Yeah, that's great. And I love it. I love it.
Also, once again, Sam Raimi's Lucky Rabbit's Foot and yours and mine's favorite character actor, Bruce Campbell, shows up once again. And he promptly kicks his own ass.
Yeah, he does.
And truly, it's like coming home. You know?
Yeah. He's pretty great.
So did you like this movie?
Let's see here. Yeah. I want to say, yeah, I thoroughly like this movie.
Because it's actually been a little mixed. Like, in terms of, like, this is a 74 on Rotten Tomatoes for critics and an 87 for audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good for audience, but actually for, like, critics, it seems, like, in my opinion, it's like, oh, like, this seems actually a little low for the type of movie we got.
Yeah. And, like, you know what's weird is that, like, I see critics, like, praising it, like, a lot. And then they go, like, oh, wow, this is one of the most unique and diverse Marvel Cinematic Universe experiences that's out there. And it's wonderful. And we loved it. And we love the special effects. They pop. The characters are likable. The whole thing is, it just comes together like peanut butter and chocolate. 7 out of 10. And, like,
I keep having to remind myself that like 75% actually isn't bad.
No,
it's still good. You know,
but the thing is that this kind of proves something to me. Is a lot of people. Criticize Marvel for stagnation was subverted in this movie. It was different. Very different. It is a thematically different film. It was shot differently. The soundtrack was done differently. The whole thing, it was oozing with fan service. It was different. And it was written the same way a comic book is written. It was hokey. It was fun in some places. There was a lot of rule of cool in effect. There was a lot of cheeky moments. It's written like a comic book.
They had a fight using music.
Yeah. They had a fight using music. Exactly. Like, there was a lot of crazy things. And so
there was also some very horrifying on-screen deaths.
Oh, yes. Yes. You know what's funny is that Sam Raimi knows exactly where that PG-13 is, and he's going to get there, you know?
Yeah.
The Black Bolt one kind of shocked me. I think that's one you got a lot of people. Like, I audibly was like, what happened? His head caves in, you see his brains dripping down his cowl. Not like visibly, but you see the lumps. I'm like, oh my god, that's kind of
that's gruesome. That's a Sam Raimi classic. Towing the line to the absolute edge.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, it didn't wind up being superhero versus villain who was a lot like hero but different. Because the thing is that we were able to watch the villain of this story get to her villain arc through all the other stories that were told before.
Yeah.
We got told this story. And so, like, that's another thing, is that there's a lot of emotional weight to seeing Wanda become a monster. By the way, a spoiler. And seeing Wanda have to realize that she's become a monster too. You know, like, when she's trying to win over the kids, when she's, you know, obviously doing terrible stuff. You know, and, like, it's just, like, you know, it didn't involve a sky laser, and it didn't involve the hero winning, because the hero is the villain, but no, the fight was won when they made the villain realize they'd become a monster, you know? And, yeah. Like, I don't know how, like, what real criticism that they really can have about this kind of thing, you know? Like, I just don't, this is what people have been wanting, right? Like, this is what, like, anytime anybody criticizes an MCU movie, they're like, it's the same as all the other ones because it's all formulaic and it's all a big formula. And we got one that goes completely against the formula, and for some reason the critics don't like it nearly as much as the one that lives the formula, like Endgame or Captain America, the Winter Soldier, or
it's almost,
you know, all those
as
other beloved ones. You know?
It's almost as if the critics don't know what they want.
They don't. That's what I feel like it is. They just don't want to know what they want. They when a film addresses the issues that were had in the previous thing or had in a series, you know, it's the same thing that happens, slight tangent, to Sonic. When the first Sonic movie came out, people complained about there not being enough Sonic. Or, you know, critics complained about for a show called Sonic the Hedgehog, there sure isn't a lot of Sonic the Hedgehog in it. And then we made Sonic 2, and they're like, wow, there is just too darn much Sonic the Hedgehog in the Sonic the Hedgehog. It's never enough. So, like, I really feel like this is one of those situations where I don't normally listen to critics anyway. I'm aware that I like doggerel a lot. But I really, like, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is one of my favorite MCU movies. It is. Now,
well, it's pretty satisfying.
It found its way into my heart. And it's not just the Sam Raimi bias, but it's because it's a comic book movie. And it feels like one. Anyway, I'm sorry.
So I
went on a rant, so I'm going to shut up.
Yeah, so here's kind of one criticism, which I kind of agree with. Because, like, WandaVision, like Wanda wasn't forgiven for what she did to Westview, but she seemed to be finding her peace. Do you think that in Multiverse of Madness, when all of a sudden she is corrupted by the Darkhold, that's like, that's just too much of a leap for her character, when we just spent an entire TV season like understanding why she did that.
I got this one. See, if you just watch the MCU stuff and the movies and the Disney Plus stuff, you'd be like, why is she getting so corrupted so fast? Now, like me, if you'd watched, like, say, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. should be canon. I'm going to bring it up every single time.
But you kind of have to assume most of the people did not watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And that version of the Darkhold is probably, like, almost entirely different.
Okay. You could go with that, except it's not the only time the Darkhold has showed up. It also showed up in Runaways.
Also a show that is known to not be canon right now.
Again. But the common thread between all of the... Oh, it also showed up in, I believe it might... Did it show up in, like, Iron Fist or Defenders?
No, it didn't. But, like, my point is, like, was the jump a little too sudden? That could kind of happened off screen, do you think?
Well, that's the thing. The Darkhold... Hell, they even kind of bring it up in the movie itself. The Darkhold is corruptive. Very corruptive. Pretty much in any incarnation that the Darkhold has showed up, if you read it, bad things happen to you. It is not a light read, to put it simply. So
do you think that's a satisfying follow up to WandaVision?
Well, I wish we had had more time. I wish they could have explained it a little, like stretched it out just a little bit more. But okay, I'm gonna roll back to back to the whole production thing issue. By all accounts, they didn't know that Sam Raimi and the writers of the movie didn't know anything about WandaVision until after it was over. So they were having to react to that. But they had already gotten a lot of the story in place before they knew anything about WandaVision. So they kind of had to work around it. Also, there was a bit of a scene that would have kind of clued us in a little bit faster, but it was deleted out because it might have ruined things. You see, we never got to see what happened to 616, the 616 version of Mordo.
That's a plot thread that just got dropped from the first movie.
There is a supposed deleted scene where Mordo goes hunting after Wanda and promptly gets his ass decapitated.
Really?
Yeah. It was supposed to set up that Wanda was not on the side of angels anymore, but they decided that it kind of ruined the flow of the film.
I don't know.
And they also maybe wanted to do more with Mordo in the future.
Yeah. If they just got rid of Mordo just like that, because, well, like part of my, I have a thing about, like, them dropping plot threads. Like, I think the Captain Marvel 2 is going to drop, like, a lot of the plot threads from the first movie. Aren't following that, even though it seems like that was the point of, like, that seems like the direction that the sequels were going to go in, and they kind of like changed their plans based on like larger MCU stuff.
Yeah, I have a feeling that the pandemic changed a lot of plans, and they had to work around that as well. But again, I have a feeling I can almost guarantee you we haven't seen the last of Mordo.
Yeah, might show up later.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to see more of that.
So after all that rambling, the answer is this kind of, it's like, yeah, could have maybe done a little bit better, but the movie was cool anyway.
Oh, and we also got entered.
I don't know a whole lot about that rant, by the way. A whole lot of it seeming like it comes out of nowhere. It becomes fairly obvious.
Yeah, it does.
When you look at it, because...
Well, it's more, it's like it kind of undoes the... Sorry, that it kind of like undoes the character development from WandaVision when it's just, oh, she kind of went crazy because she read the book.
It wasn't the book that drove her... Well, it is the book that drove her to madness, first of all. It's the one that showed her the windows, basically, to these other places where her children are real. And on top of all that, she has not had any opportunity to properly grieve what happened. She hasn't. Yeah. She doesn't have a healthy grieving process. It just isn't there.
She has had to live in her anger.
The other thing is that the Darkhold is known to be a corrupting force. Agatha, when she was using it and using the magics that she knew from it, it made her fingers black. It was corrupting her because it's a corrupting force. And when we see Wanda, when she's using her magic, it's obvious that she is affected by it, you know, because she's got the same black fingers.
Yep.
And so, like, I don't feel like they had to tell us anything. We could, as an audience, see it and understand it that way.
Oh, I got it. It just may be a little disappointing if you really followed Wanda's story through WandaVision. And just turns out, like, she went evil. That's all I'm saying.
She didn't go evil. She
became a villain.
You could see that she was maybe starting to get better, but then she fell off the path and fell hard.
Yeah, because she had the Darkhold.
So what were all those cameos, guys? The cameos.
Let's go into the fact that we got to see Patrick Stewart as Charles Xavier in a comet and that in a yellow hover chair with the X-Men theme playing over him.
Yep.
And all of this is in the MCU.
Yep. Well, I mean, it's in a universe parallel to
our MCU. Yeah.
It's the fact that it exists out there. It exists yes. out there.
Well, it did.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that.
That means there's X-Men out there.
Yes. Also, we got to see a version of Reed Richards. It's not, well, actually, no. This portrayal of Reed Richards just kind of lies and just kind of follows the trend that Reed Richards is useless.
No, he's not. Reed Richards is great.
I know he's well.
He's the smartest man alive. What are you talking about? I will not abide Reed Richards slander.
Reed Richards.
But he did totally get tabled. Yes, he did get tabled. Absolutely.
Okay, let me put this in wrestling terms. Reed Richards is the ultimate jobber.
No, he's not. No. When one of the most powerful men on the planet views you as not only an equal, but an extreme threat, and I'm talking about Dr. Doom, side note, you had to have done something to make that happen. When a cosmic entity that is known to devour planets comes around to you and knows you by your first name because you built one of the few machines that he has a reason to be afraid of.
Okay,
That's not jobber territory, buddy. That's slander.
Okay. And I'll take let me, to court. let me further correct myself. Every time Reed Richards has been on film, he's been a jobber.
You had to whittle the stick down to a point, didn't you? Didn't you there? Didn't you?
Yes, I did. But
you know what he was doing?
But I do have a point.
No, you don't. You know why? I got a reason why. I got a reason why. Do you know why? Do you know why their version of Doctor Strange's cape didn't get vaporized by Black Bolt? Because Reed Richards is holding it right in the shot, right there. He's holding the cape. He's holding the cloak of levitation. You know that blue patch that they put on the Doctor Strange's cloak to repair it? It's because it's from their universe's version of the cloak of levitation.
Okay.
Isn't that cool? But yes, also, shut up.
Yeah, take that, Dustin. Point rant.
But I will say this. John Krasinski was a chef's kiss casting choice. So
he was a great casting choice, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of like the fan casting.
Yeah, it was. It really
for that
was.
Character. And I think it's all but confirmed. It was like a very last-minute thing.
I believe it was supposed to be... what was his name?
I don't know.
The guy who played
Daniel Bond. Craig. Daniel supposed Craig. To be Balder.
What?
No, Daniel Craig was supposed to be Mr. Fantastic.
Really? I just read a thing saying he's going to be Balder, but maybe I misunderstood.
I heard he was supposed to be Mr.
Like Idris Elba?
No,
Daniel Craig.
Oh. Oh, that he was going to be Balder. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't. I don't know what I mean.
It was like a Thor guy. I would say they did a really good job of, or they took really not say good job. They took special care not to show that he stretched very much.
Yeah,
you notice that they almost tried to hide it.
No, he did stretch.
Yeah, he did, but it's very subtle.
And then he got turned into spaghetti.
Yeah,
I was gonna say string, not spaghetti, string cheese. Well, at least until he got it to his head, and then it was like
he popped.
he popped like a freaking Christmas cracker.
I also did not like how Captain Marvel got crushed by a statue because I thought Captain Marvel was supposed to be
invulnerable. Yeah,
supposed pretty much invulnerable, and a statue killed her. So okay.
Well, it could be.
Could be the one that turned her powers off.
Yeah.
Maybe. Fun to see Haley Atwell as Captain Carter.
In live action.
Although it seemed kind of out of character that that she would be the type to like sacrifice entire like dimensions like the other Illuminati have no problem doing.
But you gotta remember this is another variant on Captain Carter.
Yeah.
That's right, they go on red there. That's crazy.
Then we got Black Bolt, the same actor who was in that TV show.
Boltagon.
Yeah. But let me go ahead and warning, do not watch the Inhumans television show. You will be wasting your time and you will not get it back.
No.
And I didn't know this, but that's the guy who plays Captain Pike in the current Star Trek TV shows.
Well, there you go.
And then Charisse Theron is another character that I do not know. Name's Cleo.
Clea. She in the comics is the niece of the Dread Dormammu. She has been at one time the ruler of the Dark Dimension. The enemy, friend, lover, wife, and successor to Doctor Strange in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a fairly significant character in the for them to introduce.
Not my favorite, like end credit, mid credit scene. I thought it would have been better to kind of leave that Sam Raimi-esque cliffhanger, with the third eye, and just kind of leave it at that. Like this seemed a little forced, but.
Yeah,
I have a feeling it was.
But the second post-credit scene is the greatest post-credit scene in the history of all Marvel movies.
It's Bruce Campbell beating himself up center screen, and I can't. And my brother, I was watching it with my brother, and he was like, "Well, that's it." And I just in my head was like, "You need more than that?"
The mid-credit scene is always, like, the quote-unquote important one. Mm-hmm. Then the end credit is usually just a funny little gag.
Yeah.
But we haven't even mentioned America Chavez. What do you think of her in this movie?
I liked her. She's fine.
I liked her.
She was kind of a sidekick character. That's all, you know? It's really... Really all I really hope that we see her we see her come back.
Yeah, she's a bit of a sidekick, living MacGuffin.
Yeah, yeah. But she, you know, I don't think she was too, you know, she wasn't really in the way, or like she wasn't really she wasn't an issue. Like I thought she's just fine.
It's a good job, I thought. She fit right in.
Yeah, yeah. Because I she's fine. It also helps that Xochitl Gomez is so... She's adorable. So, like...
Yeah. You
know, it's not... You know, I... I was seeing a lot of the internet reactionaries being really upset that we got to see a gay couple on screen.
Oh no!
But like, I'm like, guys, it is current year. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal.
It's like, watch out! There's going to be a lot more of it.
It's just another part of the MCU.
Yeah, MCU. Oh my god. Yeah, these little manlets who just decide that as long as it's something that is outside of their little bubble, yeah. That man, you and your 10 friends are just really not fans of gay people, I see. Well, too bad you don't live in the 21st century anymore. Anyway, I heard the guys behind me like audibly groan when America's parents were on screen, and I was like,
did you not see that she was wearing a pride flag the entire time?
She was wearing a pride pin, and I'm like, that's cute, that's really cute.
Yeah,
you know, it's because she's gay herself, which is just totally fine, not a big deal.
I don't think they did. They ever like?
No, yeah, no, they didn't touch it at all. Movie.
Well, yeah, because you know she's, because in universe and the same age as her actor, they're both 14. So, yeah, no, we're gonna light touch there, folks.
Yeah, yeah, we don't need to. But I really hope that we see more of America, because she does seem like a pretty cool character, and yeah. I haven't read much in the way of her comics at all. I like what I've seen so far. She's really cool. And I have a friend who was so perturbed that she punches star-shaped holes, and it was specifically star-shaped holes. It was punched star-shaped holes. Why did it have to be star-shaped holes? And I'm like, because the same reason that E.T. is brown, there's no reason. There doesn't need to be a reason. Rule of cool.
Yeah, it's because she's. I mean, her name. It's because her name is America. That's why.
Well, it's also. Well, she was. There was this part of Marvel Comics for a while where they were making a lot of America themed or Captain America adjacent characters, yeah. who weren't white men, basically,
yeah.
Or who weren't straight white men. And so she came from that little project that happened, and so that's why America's her name, and she gets called Miss America, or and so that's
like, that's, I know, her. America is like a name, like an actual name, but it's so weird, yeah. Hearing it's like, we have to save America.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, Doctor Strange, you sure do.
Yep, we're here to save America, damn it. But yeah, no, I thought she was fine. Like I said, yeah. her actress did everything she needed to do, and I don't think anything that she was responsible for in the film, like, she didn't make it a detriment. You know, she wasn't a detriment. Like you know how some kid sidekick characters tend to, you know, cause problems and just be stupid, and like, oh, because they're young, you know, that's why the stupid thing happened. And it's like, no, America is unfortunately stuck in this situation that's way beyond her. That's, you know, way
she's
above
doing
her.
The best she
her
can.
Weight class. Yeah.
And, but all she wants is pizza, man.
Yeah, that's all she
in
wants.
In any and all forms.
She wants, all she wants is peace and pizza. And,
yeah.
And like, they must be leading towards like a Young Avengers type situation. Because there's all these, like,
yeah, I mean, yeah,
replacements.
Actually, there is already a Young Avengers in comics, and we're already halfway there in how they're appearing in the MCU.
Well, I mean, that's what I mean. Yeah, these characters kind of taking up the mantle from some of these legacy MCU people.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing I wanted to mention: the one of the demons that was summoned was. Well, they had to call him Gargantos, but as anyone who's ever played a fighting game knows, that's Shuma-Gorath.
That's straight up Shuma-Gorath. Yeah, yeah. He 100% actual. But there's some kind of licensing thing with Shuma-Gorath that they had trouble with. Conan the Barbarian, something related. But the weird thing is that Conan the Barbarian is public domain, so
It's actually Robert E. Howard's Cole stories, which are not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But Shuma-Gorath, everybody.
So the big one-eyed tentacle monster had to have a different name.
Yep.
Yeah, but Gargantos is a whole nother character, though.
Oh, yeah. But although, though, it's good that they had to fight not Shuma-Gorath, because Shuma-Gorath is ridiculous powerful. Like, he trained Dormammu. Like, Dormammu tutored under him. They're lucky they didn't have to fight.
It looks like we lost a little bit of the recording here. Just a couple minutes. But we talk about some of the multiverse stuff. Like the little cameos, like with the dinosaurs and the giant bees. And how we kind of wish there was a little bit more of it. And happening during, like, a climactic battle and stuff like that. So just didn't miss much. I think we also started to talk a little bit about the ending with the zombie Strange and the little demons. So we continue to talk for a while, and then we talk about the Evil Dead after the podcast is over. Enjoy.
Okay, you're talking about zombie Doctor Strange.
Soul cape!
Yeah, wearing a cape of the souls of the damned after they tried to come and take his soul, and he was like, Law, no, I was a Sorcerer Supreme, and I'm still a Master of Magic. You will do what I tell you to do, and I'm going to wear you like the most badass cape accessory ever made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those demons were definitely like little stinkers, like in Evil Dead.
Yeah. Like, that was choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so to wrap things up a little bit, excuse me, definitely enjoyed this movie. It was a little different than what I thought it was going to be, but ultimately, that was fine. I liked it just the way it was.
Yeah.
And
I don't know why the critics are, I don't know why there's all this word of mouth, but, and they, it said, and they're playing up the, oh, they just had a big drop off in numbers on the second weekend, and I'm like, it's about the same as what happened with the Spider-Man. So I don't know why y'all hyping this up. Like, it's some big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens in almost every movie.
Yeah, it happens a lot.
I mean, its first weekend, it made more than the entire run of the first movie, so people definitely wanted to go see it.
Well, yeah, because it was
cool. And it seems like people are finally going back to theaters, like, kind of like the old days. Because, like the Batman and this and Sonic and stuff are all in line or better than, like, than what was, like, pre-pandemic.
Yep, yep.
Even though, still stay safe out there, people. It's not, doesn't mean it's over.
Yeah, it's not quite over. Not yet. Still got time.
What else? So, compared to the recent MCU outings, like Shang-Chi and Eternals and Spider-Man No Way Home, I don't think I enjoy this as much as Shang-Chi, or even Spider-Man, but, like, it definitely, it was just cool to see Doctor Strange stuff happen. All the crazy wizard stuff. Like, I was pretty satisfied with all that stuff.
I mean, they turned into paint at one point.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Were we just paint? Yeah, it's really hard to eat there.
It's pretty good.
Now you have to think, wait, how do you eat when you're made of You know exactly. What? I don't
think about it. Don't think about it.
Yeah.
Just don't think about it.
Yeah,
it'll cause that... you to go insane. Get the multiverse of madness.
I was about to say something like that. How funny.
Also, did anybody else think that third eye effect was not very good?
I thought it was great. Shut up. Just kidding. No, it was a little hokey, I think.
Yeah. Like, it didn't even look real. It looked like it was like a early 2000, like,
or like a CG magical, effect. Magical yeah. Third eye put up on the forehead.
Yeah. I was not too fond of it.
Third eye.
Yeah, that might be one of those, like, last minute things they decided to put in. Maybe it looked different.
I'll say this, though. Throughout the entire film, I was like, this feels like exactly what you would think a Sam Raimi superhero horror film would look like.
Yeah.
And all the right.
Yeah, there were a lot of spooky stuff in it, too.
I mean, yeah, good stuff. Go watch it. And I don't know why people are complaining about
it. Yeah, I don't either, but, you know.
I think people were really expecting after, like, Spider-Man did all this, like, from other movie stuff, like, they were expecting, like, the X-Men to show up, or the, I don't know, just this crazy stuff, and it just kind of, it's pretty dialed in, all things considered.
Well, yeah, because, like, a lot of times people, I think it's, yeah, the you're probably right. People, will set themselves up to they set themselves up to believe something will happen when it won't, you know? Like, that's an issue. And that just, that's just a little annoying, I think.
So the next MCU thing on Disney is going to be Ms. Marvel.
Yep.
And then soon after that is going to be Thor, Love and Thunder.
Yep.
Yay!
And also Obi-Wan Kenobi is in a couple weeks.
Now that's not Marvel, but it's still something worth looking forward to.
Okay, so thank you, Dustin.
I'm always have fun.
I'm glad you got to see the movie in theaters so you could join us.
Yeah, it was It was kind of a touch-and-go thing, but we got it there.
And Randy, always a pleasure.
Oh, yeah, you know me. You know how I am.
Yeah.
Everybody, just stay safe out there. That's all we're asking. You know, that and vote.
Yeah.
Please vote. This podcast gone political.
Oh, no. Not
bad, Dustin.
We're woke.
No, I'm not telling you how to vote or who to vote for. I'm just telling you to vote, please.
How dare you bring up those things in a thing? How dare you show something in the media that is also shown in the media? Gross.
Okay.
I think you got lost there, but
all right. Yeah, thanks. Thanks you too for joining me. And thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed the movie and the TV show in our talking about it. And I'm sure Randy, you're going to go play more Evil Dead the game.
I am absolutely going to play more Evil Dead the game, and I'm going to level up my Ash. And I'm
Who's your favorite character?
Ash.
Ash, which one? Are there like three of them or four of them?
There are four ashes.
Nope.
There's five ashes.
Four playable hero ashes, Mingus.
I mean, but technically five.
Hero ashes. Four hero ashes.
You're telling me that the evil undead skeleton ash is not an ash?
Is he a hero?
No, but he is an ash.
And Randy said three times the hero ash.
You said four hero ashes, four playable hero ashes. And the one I like playing the most is the old Ash, because he's great.
Yeah,
so slight tangent. Bye guys, but we're gonna talk about Evil Dead now. So we have the first movie, he probably just has an axe.
First movie, Ash, he has the ability to, so not only do his heavy attacks heal everybody around him, including himself, for a little bit of health, he also has his special ability, which allows him to drop his and his friends around him's fear meter. So he is very good. Like, Evil Dead 1 Ash is really, really good. He can't use... Oh, sorry. He's the only hero Ash who can't use a chainsaw. But yes, he'll pick up whatever you give him, really. Like, so sledgehammers, axes, machetes, meat cleavers, hammers, swords. He'll use everything else. He's the only only hero Ash who can't use a chainsaw. The Evil Dead 2 Ash is probably one of the harder Ashes to deal with as the demon, because he has the ability to instantly exorcise a possession, and that's just his special ability. So, like, if you really, really want to make sure that he doesn't get an opportunity to do that, possess him, kick his ass. like you have to make sure, because if you possess anybody else, he's gonna be able to exorcise them, and there's not a lot you can do about that. Then the Evil Dead Army, or the Army of Darkness Ash, he's a warrior class. He gets the ability, or like his special ability is that he drinks a little potion, and it heals him, it increases his defense, it increases his offense, he loses a ton of fear, and he gets it like every 30 seconds. So he basically can go into a berserker state and kick ass for a while and stuff like that. And then Ash versus Evil Dead Ash, old man Ash, his special ability is he creates a shockwave that knocks enemies off balance, which allows you to instantly do either high damaging attacks to the deadites or execute them outright. And so he's pretty strong, but that's not his like primary thing. He actually has a passive skill where he has this aura around him. And if your allies are within, you know, the aura's radius, not only do they get a 20% reduction in fear accrual, they also do 10% more damage. So hanging around old man Ash will make you better at everything that you do. And you can, in fact, have four Ashes on a team. There's actually an achievement for it, and I've got it already because I played on a team where we had four Ashes.
Is Ash designed to be, like, better than the other characters, so you kind of have to have one?
No. So for instance, in this, because the game classes out at four different classes. So there's the leader class, the warrior class, the hunter class, and the support class. Leader class is what our Ash versus Evil Dead old man Ash is. Warrior class is what Army of Darkness Ash is. Hunter class is what Evil Dead 2 Ash is, and support class is what Evil Dead 1 Ash is. Now, there are other characters who have different abilities that are, you know, in the same class as they are. So, like, for instance, the other support character, because there are three support characters, but one of them is Cheryl, Ash's sister. And Cheryl has the ability to put down a healing area. Like, she can just drop a healing area and heals everyone to full, and she gets it back in 90 seconds. The other thing that she gets is that her passive skill is that she starts with and can carry more healing items than everybody else. And so you can basically make her be a healing item mule, where she just tosses healing items out and heals everybody. And then she also gets an ability where when she uses an amulet, friendly people who are nearby also get the amulet's benefits too. Like, she eventually gets the ability to where if she drinks a healing drink, friendly players, they just heal along with her, so they don't have to use their own. She just drinks the soda and everyone else is better. It's pretty crazy. And I have the hardest time dealing with Evil Dead 1 Ashes and dealing with Cheryl's because they keep their team alive and they're very good at it.
Which is ironic because didn't she get possessed like super easy in the first movie?
She did, and she stabbed her friend in the ankle and then she got raped by a tree, and then
we don't talk about that.
But then she shows up in Ash vs. Evil Dead. I don't remember what the circumstances were because I didn't get that far in it, but she apparently shows up because she's apparently alive. And then,
same actress?
Yes, actually. Cool. Everybody that they could get back, they did get back to voice the characters. So,
well, I meant like in Ash vs. Evil Dead. And I guess the game too.
Yeah, that too. But anyway. Then, like, the hunter classes, they're almost like an offensive support class is really what they are, because they do end up being better with guns than anybody else, but a lot of their, like, abilities are, like, make teammates shoot better for a little bit, or make or exercise the demon, or, you know, they're very utility-oriented. One of them makes it so that he not only can see traps, but he can disable them too, like with his special ability. And then we get warriors, which is probably the most straightforward class. So we get one guy, Scotty from the first movie. Scotty. He's in it, and he's a melee powerhouse. He goes into a berserker state, where it's actually more of a berserker state, where he just ends up just doing a fuck ton of damage for a little while and knocks monsters over really easy and shit like that. He turns into a beast. It's terrible. And then they got Henry the Red, and Henry gets a invincibility shield for 7 seconds, and so like he doesn't get startled. He just becomes invincible for a while, and it's really helpful when like you're fighting against something that's just constantly whooping your ass. And then the other leader, so like there are three leaders. So one of them is the Ash versus Evil Dead Ash. I already talked about him. One of them is what's her name? Annie from Evil Dead 2, the girl who helps Ash banish the monster and sends Ash back in time. But Annie Nobley, oops. Yeah. And her, you know what's funny is that she has the leadership thing too, but she like just generally makes people who are shooting just better around her. So like she specifically just makes people do more damage with guns. And then the third leader is Arthur, the king in Army of Darkness. Or the main knight guy. Was he the king? I don't remember if he was the king or not.
I don't think he was supposed to be King Arthur, but yeah.
I was going to say, he's basically King Arthur, but he's the other leadership character, and he just basically makes everybody like more brave and all that stuff, and he gets the awesome ability of imbuing his melee weapon with fire so that he can do fire damage while he's smacking the shit out of deadites with it. And, like, I think he can pass it on to other people, too. So, like, everybody's suddenly being able to swing fire around, and it's rad.
It's kind of funny, like, when they're making this game, they're probably like, okay, how do we make normal lady into a hunter class? You know, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Deadites have three different groups. Which are the Warlord, which is basically just straight up, good old fashioned, just like Mama used to make Deadites, just possessed zombie people who go out and kick your ass, and you control one of the bosses that the Deadites use is Henrietta, which is the Deadite in the basement from the second movie, and she looks like her. You know, big floating naked old lady. That's it's horrifying.
I remember the match. One of the matches I watched was You just getting your face like
I got fucking motorboated, or like I was forced to motorboat this disgusting monster, and I'm like, my life is hell right now. And I was like,
You know, you have the skeletons from Army of Darkness with evil Ash.
You do have the skeletons from Army of Darkness with evil Ash. I think they're the most fun for me because I like to be a very frontline commander kind of person, and the skeletons are really good for that because evil Ash summons more skeletons and he empowers the skeletons and he uses skeletons in the combat and he fights like a man, you know.
Sorry, places down like the flute playing skeletons. I guess that's probably Bussio's skeleton. And like I love how when you're playing the demons, like this must have been intentional. You basically play as the zoom-in camera.
Yeah, you do! You do! What's really cool about that, the way that the Kandarian demon like works, is while the players can't see the demon, we can actually hear the demon. And so,
You're knocking over, like, fences and stuff, so...
Yep, you're knocking shit over and stuff like that, and that's another way for people to know that you're nearby. But there's also, like, these growling noises that you hear all the time, when the monster's around, and, it's incredible. It's such a silly amount of fun. Like, I haven't had... I haven't had this much fun in an asymmetrical game in a long time.
Seems to be a little bit more thought out than like Friday the 13th.
It is a lot more thought out than Friday the 13th. I also think it also feels like
Friday the 13th had a chance to grow and not been hampered by the owners of the license.
Yep.
Which That is still a nightmare situation, even though the lawsuit's over.
Yeah.
Because the owners of it, the license in the U.S., can make a movie in the U.S. starring Jason, but they cannot call it Friday the 13th.
Yep.
Conversely, the people who own it, the international rights, it's like the exact opposite. They can make a movie with Jason in it, but they cannot call it Friday the 13th outside of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So is the third faction of the demons from the TV show?
They are. I forget what they're called exactly, but they're like a more pure form of the demons. They're like a split off version of them,
yeah.
And they are. They're terrifying. Because, like, one really, really super duper fucking annoying thing that they do is that when they die, they explode. And it's not like a little bit of damage, it's a lot. You gotta pay attention when they die, because you'll get hurt real bad. And I'm like, God damn it, I hate it. Their boss, when he's moving, he's invisible, but when he stops, you can see him, and it's really annoying because he just shows up and you're like, oh, hey, asshole. And then he beats you up and you're like, oh, thanks, dude. Appreciate you.
Definitely going to watch that show. I just watched the movies and I'm going to watch the show.
Yeah. I need to watch. I got a couple episodes in I'm probably going to end up watching that myself.
All right, so I think if you listen to our little Evil Dead tangent, hope you had fun. Thanks again for joining us, everyone, and see you next time.
Later on, nerds.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Stay safe.